97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Wiggins America.
I am not a number. I am a free man.
Wiggins America.
The only thing I'm going to need from you guys right now is a cup of coffee.
Wiggins.
Today's global economy waits for no man.
America.
Today's global business climate is like,
whatever, dude.
Politics is a dirty game. I'm not sure we want to play.
There are forces here at work that you couldn't possibly understand. You have no idea how high up this goes.
Welcome to Wiggins America.
Roy back in studio. We are kind of hopping around here from guest to guest. Here for quandaries, back for polls.
Okay.
Didn't even know that's what we were talking about, did you?
Nope.
I got a whole bunch of polls here. I talked about some of these last week on the Annie Fry Show, but I wanted to bring them to you because I think they're good snapshots for just issues that Americans are facing.
And you do like your polls.
I do love polls. I love them. this one is about the ganj. Marijuana, Roy.
Hmm.
A new poll has found that exactly 50% of Americans have tried marijuana at some point in their life. Are you surprised at that number, either low or high?
50%. it's kind of an easy number, half. You know.
well, this is a real Gallup poll, and it's tracked. And that's just where it is now. They started this in 1969 asking this question.
I would say, because I lived a sheltered life and I'm not fun, that would seem high to me, except since it's this whole let's make it legal stuff has really picked up a lot of steam, that people have tried.
That's what it is. It's tried, not actively using.
I think it might be low.
I do too.
Yeah.
I thought it was low for people who've tried marijuana.
Yeah.
Especially now. But listen to the way that this number has risen. In 1969, when Gallup started asking this question, 4% said they had tried pot. Now, there might be a social stigma there where they're not answering that question. But in less than a decade, so this is throughout the 70s, the number rose by 20 percentage points to 24% by the end of the 70s. In 1985, 33% said they had tried it. 2015, we'd make a big jump there. To 2015, the number finally breaks 40% for the first time.
Hmm.
Now, from 2015 to 2023, it is now at 50%. It's only going to rise, right?
Yes.
It's becoming more normal. It's becoming not just legal, but socially acceptable to talk about getting baked on the weekend.
Right.
In ways that I never would have experienced even when I was in college, which wasn't that long ago.
Right.
But people openly that I know, that I respect, are like, oh, yeah, we had some pot brownies. I'm like, what? you just this weekend, like just hanging out? And they're like, yeah. Like, that is a new threshold. And what I think the only concern I have is that, like, legally, there's a strong case to be made that drug usage should be legal as long as it's not affecting anybody else. Like, there should be very hard parameters around it. But there are people that will argue, hey, if you want to go do psychedelic mushrooms in the comfort of your own home and you're not driving and you're not affecting anybody, if you're a hermit and you're not beating your kids when you get crazy high or something, then that should be legal. I'm not saying that, but I'm saying I understand the argument.
Mm.
Like from a libertarian standpoint.
Yeah, definitely from that perspective.
But overall, and not to cut you off, but overall, do we really want to go down this road? I mean, is this what we're saying? Well, this is the next great movement in America is making people more drug addicted. Certainly it will become drug addicted, but at least using drugs. We want to make people more aware that they can use drugs and it's okay.
Well, the more we talk about it here, the more I'm thinking that 50% is way off, because I'm thinking okay, how many people have, you know, rolled a doob, you know, but I wasn't even thinking about the edibles.
Oh, yeah.
Which are probably through the roof.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
and I think that's more common now, because smoking is a thing.
Yeah.
But edible, eating a gummy,
yeah,
that's real easy.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we're already too far gone on that. There's no going back, at least from the marijuana standpoint.
Yeah, but it's a gateway drug. It definitely is, because the minute it became legal in Missouri, you start seeing billboards for other drugs that, yeah. you may need this medicinally now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just step. It's just like the casinos. Like, well, we'll just allow them to be on river boats that float down the Mississippi River,
yeah,
and have to take a tour. Well, we won't make a tour anymore. Well, you just have to be near water. Well, you know, you got to have, it has to rain on the building once in a while. Like, that's the progression. That's what this is going to be.
Yeah.
I think by the time my kids are adults, you're going to see probably more hard drugs legal than ever before, because there's already a push for that. Not necessarily right where we're standing, but in certain states. Yeah. Parts of
well,
the country.
I read an article the other day about Oregon. They're actually starting.
Yeah.
People who were all for legalizing drugs are like, well, wait a minute, we tried it.
Oh, no, I did not see this.
Yeah, I'll have to figure out where that was and let you know. But there's kind of a movement among traditionally liberal or libertarian people saying, well, maybe this make it all legal wasn't such a good idea.
Well, because it just adds to people's problems who already are that's like doing drugs isn't dealing with your problem.
Right.
It's masking the way you feel about it for a little while, and then that's what gets addictive about it.
Mm-hmm.
And it also opens the door up for more kids to be doing these things because it's more available.
Right.
And I think that we're going to be shocked to find, no, we won't. Yeah. It'll be the same thing as anything. We'll all go, oh, yeah, that does suck.
Yeah.
And no, nothing will change. We'll just make it more legal because more people got more problems.
We'll be old crotchety guys saying, well, we told you so.
Man, I was an old crotchety guy when I was in my 20s.
Yeah, me too.
Okay, another poll. CBS News poll analysis looks at how Americans rate the economy through a partisan lens. I don't think there's going to be a huge surprise here that when Joe Biden is in office for the last few years, Democrats at about 50% say, you know what, the economy's okay.
Yeah.
Republicans at about 15%. So, like, we're living in different worlds that you try to spin your own actual experience based on what you want to be true.
Yeah.
During Trump. And this moves up and down a little bit. Like, it drops off in 2020 because the economy tanks. But generally, throughout Trump's term, you had Republicans at about 90% saying, yeah, the economy's pretty good. Democrats at about 60%. So they weren't completely saying that it was terrible, but they did not want to acknowledge that it was really good.
Right.
And then during Obama, there is also a split. So it's not as if this is just Democrats denying reality and Republicans. Like, throughout Obama's term, well, I mean, maybe depending on how you read the economy from 2008-2016, you saw Republicans generally saying that the economy was getting better, but Democrats saying that it was getting better a lot faster. That's perception. That's somewhat understandable to me,
mm-hmm.
because it was getting better, but it was just slow. And you kind of did want to see that through your partisan lens a little bit. But here's what surprises me. During W. Bush, Republicans generally said at about 75% throughout most of his term that the economy was pretty good. Democrats at about 40%. This is general, but I just think there's a little bit of denying reality here going on, and probably both directions. But the way that I look at this poll is that if in the last few years you think the economy's pretty good, you're stupid.
Yeah.
And you're just a partisan. Like, you're not saying anything about reality. And then when it's really good, well, because it's Trump, I don't think it's good. That's ridiculous, right?
Right.
Anything to add to that?
Yeah, I think probably a lot of people, myself included, if somebody were to ask me about the economy, if I sat down and really, you know, okay, what are economic indicators? Most people don't do that.
Yeah.
It's a it's an all-encompassing, how do I generally feel about the way my life's going right now?
Yeah.
Even though the question is economy, I'm going to think about, okay, how much...
My economy.
Yeah, how much is gas cost and food, and but generally, what do I feel like? And then you've got the influence of the media playing a role in that. It's not just everybody's being objective. You're going by what you hear.
Yeah.
And, you know, if they're pounding into your head, oh, Bush is terrible, the economy's terrible, that's going to influence some people.
But they weren't even able, they tried to tell you that the economy, they would look for anything they could find that was wrong during Trump.
Yeah.
And there was nothing.
Right.
Until they, literally the Democrat politicians, tanked the economy in 2020 on purpose by shutting it down. They said, here's the economy, it's good, we're going to make it bad.
Yes.
We're going to give a reason for that, and it's disease.
Yeah.
But that's what we're going to do. Anyway.
Well, I think your numbers point out the uniqueness of the Trump presidency and what... how that can even supersede when reality is so powerful, even a media against it, even the Democrats have to acknowledge.
To an extent,
yeah,
but not fully. Here's what's sad, and we'll take a break right after this because I got a whole bunch more I want to come back with, but during George Bush the first, as in H.W. Bush, there was a partisan gap, but it wasn't as wide, so Republicans thought it was at, I don't know, about 50% to it dipped toward the end of his term, where Democrats thought it was a more about 25%, which is still a gap, but it's not quite as wide.
Yep.
During Clinton, everybody was almost exactly the same. There was almost no partisan gap during Clinton. So that just says to me that Republicans are at least a little bit more willing to acknowledge economic realities than
true.
Spin.
Yeah.
Not entirely, but a little bit more.
Yeah.
Let's stop there because I got a bunch more of these that I want to talk about with you. We'll be right back. Old Roy back with us. We're talking about polls here on Wiggins America. And this one is one we did not get to. So these are polls that I've been looking at for weeks now, just kind of watching and interested to see how they move, if they move. Half of Americans, Old Roy, anticipate a U.S. Civil War soon, survey finds. Yeah. Yeah, and I can't. I printed this out in a way that I could read it better, because when you print out articles, I do this all the time. It comes with so many ads in them that I end up kind of getting rid of the ads. So I can't remember which outlet this was. It's just stupid of me because I deleted it. But it was a very left-leaning outlet. So when I read this to you, you'll hear their spin on the poll. Findings suggest that rising gun violence will spill into the political sphere, driven by conspiracy theories. This is a mainstream outlet, too. Violence can seem to be everywhere in the United States. Political violence is in the spotlight with the January 6, 2021 insurrection as Exhibit A. Now, a large study confirms that 1 in 5 Americans believe violence motivated by political reasons is, at least sometimes, justified. But it doesn't say which party. You can see the lens that they're writing this through, but they won't say this kind of stuff. Nearly half, this is the headline again, nearly half expect a civil war, and many say they would trade democracy for a strong leader. I kid you not. A preprint posted today on MedRxiv found, although almost all respondents thought it's more important for the United States to remain a democracy, about 40% said having a strong leader is more important. It does not tell you the party breakdown, which means it's probably not good for them.
Yeah.
Half expect a civil war in the United States in the next few years. It didn't say when, but just the next few years. Where do you fall on that? As far as, do you expect a civil war in the United States?
No. I mean, in the part of the country that we live in, you know, There's a lot of people who are very adamant about their Second Amendment rights and just the constitutionality of our way of living, who, you know, are just, they're just sort of predetermined. They're going to protect themselves and their what is theirs. And so I think it's a real stretch to jump to expect a civil war, like an actual.
Well, I think
hot war.
Look aside from what the article's trying to paint, and just listen to the data in the poll, and ask yourself if you were asked, do you expect a civil war in the United States in the next few years? How would you react to that question in a poll?
I don't like polls as much as you, because the questions sort of predetermine at least a subset of answers. And that's too broad of a question. I mean, it would depend if they just blatantly steal another election and figure out a way to imprison Trump and just eliminate the wishes of half of or more than half of the country. There's going to be a pushback. I don't think it's going to be, you know, guys getting out their muskets and, you know, running around creating battlefields out of half of the major cities. But I think I could envision almost a cold civil war of some kind of just civic disobedience and things like that. But there's too much at stake for too many people on both sides to allow
an actual war.
Yeah.
That's concerning just this question. That's where I would land on it, is that I don't think you're going to see two sides declare a war.
Right.
Because there isn't a Mason-Dixon line anymore.
Right.
There's just, it's coastal, it's cities versus rural. You know, how would you fight an actual war? The way that it would look to me, I actually would answer this question possibly yes. I don't. It would depend on more factors. Like, what are you asking here?
Right.
But if I just had to answer it, I would say, yeah, that's possible. But it's not going to look like the Civil War or even a traditional war at all.
Right.
It will look like chaos. Mm-hmm. It'll just look like chaotic mess in the streets of people fighting each other. And so much of it's digital now that it's almost like the digital yelling just gets louder, and then you have oppression from big sources trying to just stifle people, which is actually what we're already seeing and
but
doing.
I think you could see people in positions of authority and public servants kind of being forced into picking a side, to where it's grown beyond just public discourse. To, like, we've seen glimpses of it with sheriffs saying they're not going to enforce certain gun laws or something. You know, you would probably see more of that.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good example of laws being passed that certain parts of the country just go, no.
Yeah.
I'm not going to do it. I mean, the surprising one that we're seeing right now is the actual administration in the White House disobeying Supreme Court orders. Just saying they're not going to follow them, or they're going to do an end around. This is one I actually meant to bring this up with you, but we're going to not have time, that the Biden administration has issued guidelines for getting around the Supreme Court affirmative action case. Have you seen that?
No.
Yeah. I mean, they are racists. They're just coming out and saying, we want you to be racist in academia. Here's how you can still do it. Yeah. I know that and so it's not just like, that's morally wrong. They're also legally going against the Supreme Court order. Now, you could say, well, no, they're not really. They're actually just finding those Dr. J loopholes that we talked about. They're finding those little caveats that they could still use. But ultimately, the spirit of what the Supreme Court said is, you can't use race to allow people into your school anymore.
Right.
That is unconstitutional and wrong, and we overturn it.
Well, Obama really sort of kicked up the level of let's just, the separation of powers is inconvenient for what I want to do, and so we'll figure out ways to bypass it. And that's just continuing now with Biden and his administration, and it needs to get corralled, or it could get way out of hand.
Yeah, yeah. Last one. Trump's indictments might be hurting him, just not in the primary polls. Now, this is from 436 or sorry, 538, just numbers, who cares? 538's national polling. It's Nate Silver, he's a pretty famous poller. Trump has a record high lead in the GOP primary polls, I'm doing a good job, but his favorability ratings are taking a hit. What do you think about this? Is there any truth to this? Because when I look at the numbers, the headlines say one thing and the numbers say another. They say Trump's net favorability rating among Republicans fell from plus 57 to plus 55. That's not a huge drop. And also, that's the kind of stuff that you see just in normal polling moves. So writing the headline is a little bit deceiving, in my opinion. But it is a concern if you're voting for Trump in the primary. If you have gotten a little more steely about doing that, even because of these things, which I kind of have, is it going to hurt him in the general? Because that's my biggest concern right now.
You can make that argument any election, any year, and any time in history. I mean, you're always, the numbers are going to be different. And that's why historically politicians have campaigned differently in the primary, and then they soften for the general, because there's an, you're pooling from a larger
pond.
And so, yes, his current numbers for the primary are way elevated, because you're basically looking at people who already support him, or at least support the party that he represents. So, yeah, he'll take a dip in the general, but not because of this stuff. If anything, they've gone way too far. And even the independents and even some Democrats are like, all right, another indictment, really? You know, this is it. They already have their opinion of Trump as a person.
Yeah. Nobody's like, who's this guy?
Yeah.
I haven't made my mind up yet.
So favorability would, I think, could actually go up out of sort of, in a weird way, a sympathy for, all right, they're just throwing everything at this guy. I don't like him, but this is beyond.
And as a polling guru, I can tell you that oddly, you're not necessarily seeing that with total numbers yet, but you are seeing it with demographic groups. I've been watching polling on this, and the craziest thing, now the Latin vote in general is just moving toward Republicans, but also toward Trump. That's been happening since 2015, though. That's not really because of indictments. That's just happening.
Yeah, I remember talking to you about that.
And it's still moving. Then. Like every year that goes by, it's actually moving more and more.
Mm-hmm.
So that's actually very encouraging for, you know, Republicans. But the number that you've seen affected the most by the indictments, and this is polling that is it's not in front of me, so I can't quote it, but the numbers have moved the most among Black men concerning the indictments. They'll ask, does this make you like or dislike Trump more or whatever? And they'll ask lots of people, wide variety. Mm-hmm. The movement that you've seen the most is among Black men. And there you could theorize, in the articles that I read do, they say they actually look at the guy as persecuted now and say, I like him more because he is being held down by the system. And you're not only seeing that in polling, I'm seeing this in like undercurrents of articles, like deep stuff, that Democrats are actually pretty concerned about that number. Now, it hasn't changed their playbook at all, but it could if it continues. And also, last point to make before we have to close out here.
Yeah.
I think it's too early for any of this to really matter. We're so far away from the general, and the news cycle moves so fast that really it's the same thing as Russia collusion. They're trying to paint an overall picture that this guy is a criminal. So I want to stay away from him. And all it takes is I'm just trying to get 5,000 people in Arizona to not show up for Trump. I'm just trying to get 4,000 people in Michigan to not show up for him. That's all they're trying to do. They don't care about us in Illinois or Missouri or California or wherever. They care about just enough people in five states to just tarnish them enough.
One county in Ohio.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's all they care about. That or trying to keep him off the ballot, if you can criminalize him. You know, if you can actually put him in jail, then all right, then we've done a good job here.
Yeah.
Final thoughts before we end? I know it.
No.
Hey, that's why we have you on the show.
Yeah.
Because you think deep.
I do.
And you give the truth. If you don't have anything going on up here, you will let us know.
It's gone. It's empty.
All right, we'll be right back. This happened a couple weeks ago. Been holding on to it because, as I said a couple weeks ago also, there's a solution to this problem. And it's right in front of our eyes. Politicians, you, listen, because you could spearhead this and you can own it. You don't even have to attach my name to it. If you didn't hear me talking about it a couple weeks ago, I'm going to tell you. Here's the story first. 50 people raid a California mall in a massive smash and grab. A crowd of nearly 50 people dressed in hoodies and masks stormed a Los Angeles Nordstrom department store over the weekend, stealing tens of thousands of dollars in merchandise. Or in other words, three pairs of jeans. Hey, you didn't know you were going to get the comedy in this story, but there it is. Nordstrom's expensive, that's the joke. A group of thieves not only acted out the smash and grab at the store, but also attacked security guards with bear spray, and Los Angeles Police Department shared this all. So, first of all, I'm rather impressed. I can't even get 10 people together at any given moment, let alone 50. 50 people getting together to do anything is a pretty strong accomplishment in and of itself. So I got to give them credit for that. What they did with the 50 people once they got together, not a huge fan of that. The incident went down at the Topanga Mall. I didn't know that there was a mall named after the character in Boy Meets World. Topanga? Is that how you pronounce that? The incident went down at the Topanga Mall at approximately 4 p.m. last Saturday. So this is 2 weeks ago now. According to the police, the thieves made off with luxury bags and clothing items after leaving behind a path of destruction. I can only imagine 50 people in hoodies and masks running through the mall. Now, the left would probably say, well, it's at least they were wearing masks. Footage from the scene quickly... It's a lot of comedy in this. I didn't expect this. I'm sorry about that. Footage from the scene quickly made its way online, showing the havoc in store as the thieves knocked over fixtures and mannequins while destroying display cases and leaving employees looking helpless. After dashing through aisles and taking $60,000 to $100,000 worth of merchandise. Man, have you ever shopped at Nordstrom? It really is expensive. So you could rack up a bill pretty quick there. The crowd fled the scene in several cars, including a BMW and a Lexus, the cops said. Police shared that at least one guard was hit with bear spray and needed treatment from paramedics who responded to the mall. To criminals, it's just property taken, the Los Angeles Police Department said in a statement. To those who live in the area and patronize the Topanga Mall, is a loss of feeling safe. There's a lot more that it goes into here, but I just keep wanting to make Topanga jokes now. I'm sorry about that. I said before, I have the solution to this kind of thing, because what's happening now is that clearly, I mean, with 50 people, I don't know that having a couple of security guards is really going to do much. You might be able to tackle one of them, take out two or three max. But the trouble is, they don't even really tell these people to do anything anymore. I mean, if you're an employee of a store, the liability associated with even trying to stop a criminal, the viral video that was going on also probably a couple weeks ago now, was the one with the guy, I think he was Sikh, S-I-K-H, I don't know how to spell it, the religion that wears the turban, Indian religion. It was two of those guys who were running a convenience store. I think this was in New York. And there was a guy that just walks behind the counter and starts dumping cigarette boxes into a trash can. And he's just going to steal. And he's not even trying to pretend like he's armed. I mean, he's just like, hey, I'm going to steal all this and I'm going to walk out knowing that you're not going to do anything. Well, is it any surprise that you're talking about deep blue areas, and especially in deep blue states like California and New York, this is happening the worst, San Francisco, of course. But these are like the darkest blue areas of deeply blue states. The trouble is, as I read this story about 50 people walking through this Nordstrom, terrorizing it, what happens in California happens next in America, typically. Hopefully that's not the case, because then we'll have people fleeing the country like crazy, like they are California. That would be bad. But usually trends do start in California and then they move here to the rest of the country. My hope is that this isn't one of them. But here's how to stay away from that trend. Here's how to stay ahead of it. I've said this before. Politicians, listen up. Here's a solution. If companies are worried about their liability with hurting a criminal, you know, we're to the crazy state where the old story where a guy is trying, and it's, I think it's a true story, guy was trying to break into a house and fell through a window, like a skylight, fell on a knife and sued the couple that he was stealing from. That's the state that we're in with theft, that we've made so many laws to protect the victim that the companies, the people who are the actual victim in this case, victim, I said victim as if the person stealing is the victim. Well, we victimized them is my point. But the victim really is the store. Now, you may not like big corporate America or whatever. I got my own problems with corporate America. But you can't support the people who are just walking in and stealing from stores. Have you lost your mind? Here's how you do that, politicians. I said, listen up. Here's what it is. You go to those companies. You find out what are the laws that they're so afraid of. What are the laws that people can sue under? What gives them protection? What gives the criminal protection? And you announce publicly and boldly, brazenly, that you are going to reverse those laws. Now, you don't want to trample on civil liberties, but you do want to make a clear and loud statement to criminals and to companies that in this state, let's say it's Missouri, in this state, you will not get away with that. We are giving every right possible to the stores, to the employees, to maybe the guards, to do what they can to physically stop you from stealing. Take charge of that, because I think it would be very popular, not just Republican popular. I think this would be hugely popular across the board. And I've said it before, and I'll keep saying it, because I really want somebody to grab this and go, yeah, that makes sense. Why don't we Governor Ron DeSantis this thing and make sure that the laws are benefiting the people who they need to benefit and coming down on the people that we need to come down on. You just need some outside-the-box thinking. I think this is one of those. All right, short break. We'll be right back. Personal story to end the show today. So my wife, Katie, is an English teacher. She just got back from Cambridge, England. She flew into London for a week right before school started. So this was about a week and a half ago. And she loved it. She was with about nine other, so 10 total teachers. So it was a professional development thing, learning some stuff about the history of certain authors that come from Cambridge. Cambridge is a very, very famous university. Beautiful place, kind of touristy now, apparently. But the university is not as much as the town is. She got to see the first, like, took her into a vault. I guess it's something that they don't always do. She got to see the first New Testament in English ever, written in probably the early 1500s. Massive book, handwritten. It was the first translation to English from the New Testament. I mean, that's literally like the basis of all of Western civilization she's looking at right there. That's pretty neat. But the reason I tell this story is because with these nine people, 10 total people, you know, they're educators, so I would say generally they lean left, but I didn't really know. And she didn't know. And she said, for the most part, nobody brought up politics on this trip. They were talking about school and they were talking about things, but you spend a week with people and you get to know them and things come up, even if they're trying to stay away from those topics. And so she told me candidly, and now I'm telling you on the radio, I don't know if I should do this. I'm doing it anyway. She said, Ryan, I think there were a total of maybe two conservatives there aside from me, but nobody really said anything. It was like one topic came up one time, and I'll share that in a minute, that made her think that maybe two of them are conservatives. And then in that same topic, and one other time, three of them seemed leftist, which left four people that she just had no idea. So if you take that number, I love this story because it kind of condenses America into 10 people. And I think it's pretty indicative, actually. You condense all of America into 10 people. So four of them did not even give any indication that they were interested in politics at all. three of them seemed to be conservative, but they didn't want to make a big deal about it, and they didn't really even tip their hand much, except on one thing. And then three of them looked like they lean left, but of those three, one of them was vocal. Is that not a cross-section of America right now? So let me tell you about the one, and then I'll tell you about the other ones. The one who was vocal on this trip, get this, now she didn't say, this is how I knew he was a leftist. She said this guy was a gay art professor in San Francisco. And I said, oh, well, you probably know his politics. She said, no, that I didn't know at all. But she said at one point they all became good friends on this trip, which is great, because if you're going to spend a week with some strangers, good thing they were nice. She said on this trip, nobody really brought anything up, and everybody was getting along, and they would go to pubs in town and stuff, and they all just had a good time when they weren't at the conferences. And he said at one point, he goes, oh, thank God you guys are fun and not Trump supporters. And she thought, wow, what a weird sentence. Because most of them, like I said, had not brought up politics at all. In fact, I think generally the conversation, even that she said somebody kind of tipped their hand, that wasn't even with the whole group. So this guy had no idea what the politics of most of them were, but just assumed that because he liked them, that they must be liberal. Now that is living in a bubble. So you think people will say, oh, you're conservative, you're Midwest, you kind of live in a bubble. No, you do not. In fact, I don't really even hear that criticism a lot. It's kind of a straw man on my part, because I don't get the whole, well, you live in a bubble thing that much. But there really are people in the United States who live in a leftist bubble. They choose their media, which is fine, but they also don't even in regular interaction with people interact with anybody who's outside of their political mindset, which I do all the time, even though I work here, and I'm sure you do. But he just assumed that because they were cool, that they must not support Trump. How sheltered do you have to be to assume that you're... This happened a couple weeks ago. Been holding on to it because, as I said a couple weeks ago also, there's a solution to this problem. And it's right in front of our eyes. Politicians, you listen, because you could spearhead this. And you can own it. You don't even have to attach my name to it. If you didn't hear me talking about it a couple weeks ago, I'm going to tell you. Here's the story first. 50 people raid a California mall in a massive smash and grab. A crowd of nearly 50 people dressed in hoodies and masks stormed a Los Angeles Nordstrom department store over the weekend, stealing tens of thousands of dollars in merchandise. Or in other words, three pairs of jeans. Hey, you didn't know you were going to get the comedy in this story, but there it is. Nordstrom's expensive, that's the joke. A group of thieves not only acted out the smash and grab at the store, but also attacked security guards with bear spray, and Los Angeles Police Department shared this all. So, first of all, I'm rather impressed. I can't even get 10 people together at any given moment, let alone 50. 50 people getting together to do anything is a pretty strong accomplishment in and of itself. So I got to give them credit for that. What they did with the 50 people once they got together, not a huge fan of that. The incident went down at the Topanga Mall. I didn't know that there was a mall named after the character in Boy Meets World. Topanga? Is that how you pronounce that? The incident went down at the Topanga Mall at approximately 4 p.m. last Saturday. So this is 2 weeks ago now. According to the police, the thieves made off with luxury bags and clothing items after leaving behind a path of destruction. I can only imagine 50 people in hoodies and masks running through the mall. Now, the left would probably say, well, it's at least they were wearing masks. Footage from the scene quickly... It's a lot of comedy in this. I didn't expect this. I'm sorry about that. Footage from the scene quickly made its way online, showing the havoc in store as the thieves knocked over fixtures and mannequins while destroying display cases and leaving employees looking helpless. After dashing through aisles and taking $60,000 to $100,000 worth of merchandise. Man, have you ever shopped at Nordstrom? It really is expensive. So you could rack up a bill pretty quick there. The crowd fled the scene in several cars, including a BMW and a Lexus, the cops said. Police shared that at least one guard was hit with bear spray and needed treatment from paramedics who responded to the mall. To criminals, it's just property taken, the Los Angeles Police Department said in a statement. To those who live in the area and patronize the Topanga Mall, is a loss of feeling safe. There's a lot more that it goes into here, but I just keep wanting to make Topanga jokes now. I'm sorry about that. I said before, I have the solution to this kind of thing, because what's happening now is that clearly, I mean, with 50 people, I don't know that having a couple of security guards is really going to do much. You might be able to tackle one of them, take out two or three max. But the trouble is, they don't even really tell these people to do anything anymore. I mean, if you're an employee of a store, the liability associated with even trying to stop a criminal, the viral video that was going on also probably a couple weeks ago now, was the one with the guy, I think he was Sikh, S-I-K-H, S-I-K-H-K, I don't know how to spell it, the religion that wears the turban, Indian religion. It was two of those guys who were running a convenience store. I think this was in New York. And there was a guy that just walks behind the counter and starts dumping cigarette boxes into a trash can. And he's just going to steal. And he's not even trying to pretend like he's armed. I mean, he's just like, hey, I'm going to steal all this and I'm going to walk out knowing that you're not going to do anything. Well, is it any surprise that you're talking about deep blue areas, and especially in deep blue states like California and New York, this is happening the worst, San Francisco, of course. But these are like the darkest blue areas of deeply blue states. The trouble is, as I read this story about 50 people walking through this Nordstrom, terrorizing it, what happens in California happens next in America, typically. Hopefully that's not the case, because then we'll have people fleeing the country like crazy like they are California. That would be bad. But usually trends do start in California and then they move here to the rest of the country. My hope is that this isn't one of them. But here's how to stay away from that trend. Here's how to stay ahead of it. I've said this before. Politicians, listen up. Here's a solution. If companies are worried about their liability with hurting a criminal, you know, we're to the crazy state where the old story where a guy is trying, and I think it's a true story, guy was trying to break into a house and fell through a window, like a skylight, fell on a knife and sued the couple that he was stealing from. That's the state that we're in with theft, that we've made so many laws to protect the victim that the companies, the people who are the actual victim in this case, victim. I said victim as if the person stealing is the victim. Well, we victimized them is my point. But the victim really is the store. Now, you may not like big corporate America or whatever. I got my own problems with corporate America. But you can't support the people who are just walking in and stealing from stores. Have you lost your mind? Here's how you do that, politicians. I said, listen up. Here's what it is. You go to those companies. You find out what are the laws that they're so afraid of. What are the laws that people can sue under? What gives them protection? What gives the criminal protection? And you announce publicly and boldly, brazenly, that you are going to reverse those laws. Now, you don't want to trample on civil liberties, but you do want to make a clear and loud statement to criminals and to companies that in this state, let's say it's Missouri, in this state, you will not get away with that. We are giving every right possible to the stores, to the employees, to maybe the guards, to do what they can to physically stop you from stealing. Take charge of that, because I think it would be very popular, not just Republican popular. I think this would be hugely popular across the board. And I've said it before, and I'll keep saying it, because I really want somebody to grab this and go, yeah, that makes sense. Why don't we Governor Ron DeSantis this thing and make sure that the laws are benefiting the people who they need to benefit and coming down on the people that we need to come down on? You just need some outside-the-box thinking. I think this is one of those. All right, short break. We'll be right back. Personal story to end the show today. So my wife, Katie, is an English teacher. She just got back from Cambridge, England. She flew into London for a week right before school started, so this was about a week and a half ago. And she loved it. She was with about 9 others, so 10 total teachers. So it was a professional development thing, learning some stuff about the history of certain authors that come from Cambridge. Cambridge is a very, very famous university. Beautiful place. Kind of touristy now, apparently. But the university is not as much as the town is. She got to see the first, like, took her into a vault. I guess it's something that they don't always do. She got to see the first New Testament in English ever, written in probably the early 1500s. Massive book, handwritten. It was the first translation to English from the New Testament. I mean, that's literally like the basis of all of Western civilization she's looking at right there. That's pretty neat. But the reason I tell this story is because with these 9 people, 10 total people, you know, they're educators, so I would say generally they lean left, but I didn't really know. And she didn't know. And she said, for the most part, nobody brought up politics on this trip. They were talking about school and they were talking about things, but you spend a week with people and you get to know them and things come up, even if they're trying to stay away from those topics. And so she told me candidly, and now I'm telling you on the radio, I don't know if I should do this. I'm doing it anyway. She said, Ryan, I think there were a total of maybe 2 conservatives there aside from me, but nobody really said anything. It was like one topic came up one time, and I'll share that in a minute, that made her think that maybe 2 of them are conservatives. And then in that same topic, and one other time, 3 of them seemed leftist, which left 4 people that she just had no idea. So if you take that number, I love this story because it kind of condenses America into 10 people. And I think it's pretty indicative, actually. You condense all of America into 10 people. So 4 of them did not even give any indication that they were interested in politics at all. 3 of them seemed to be conservative, but they didn't want to make a big deal about it, and they didn't really even tip their hand much, except on one thing. And then 3 of them looked like they lean left, but of those 3, 1 of them was vocal. Is that not a cross-section of America right now? So let me tell you about the one, and then I'll tell you about the other ones. The one who was vocal on this trip, get this. Now, she didn't say, this is how I knew he was a leftist. She said this guy was a gay art professor in San Francisco. And I said, oh, well, you probably know his politics. She said, no, that I didn't know at all. But she said at one point they all became good friends on this trip, which is great, because if you're going to spend a week with some strangers, good thing they were nice. She said on this trip, nobody really brought anything up, and everybody was getting along, and they would go to pubs in town and stuff, and they all just had a good time when they weren't at the conferences. And he said at one point, he goes, oh, thank God you guys are fun and not Trump supporters. And she thought, wow, what a weird sentence. Because most of them, like I said, had not brought up politics at all. In fact, I think generally, the conversation, even that she said somebody kind of tipped their hand, that wasn't even with the whole group. So this guy had no idea what the politics of most of them were, but just assumed that because he liked them, that they must be liberal. Now that is living in a bubble. So you think people will say, oh, you're conservative, you're Midwest, you kind of live in a bubble. No, you do not. In fact, I don't really even hear that criticism a lot. It's kind of a straw man on my part because I don't get the whole, well, you live in a bubble thing that much. But there really are people in the United States who live in a leftist bubble. They choose their media, which is fine, but they also don't even in regular interaction with people interact with anybody who's outside of their political mindset, which I do all the time, even though I work here, and I'm sure you do. But he just assumed that because they were cool, that they must not support Trump. How sheltered do you have to be to assume that your politics project onto anybody as likability? That's awful. But the other story is that the couple people who did tip their hand on one issue, get this, that university is either going into or they're in the middle of a strike. So the professors are wanting more pay, and so they're striking, but they don't strike the way that we do in America. Maybe their labor laws are different or their contracts are different. I don't know which. But they want the government to pay them more money. So instead of doing the strike that we do, which is you just stop, you don't work, you put everything on hold, that's an effective way to strike. They don't do that. They just don't give grades to any of their kids. So they, and maybe it's because of contracts, like they're obligated to work, but they've found this way around it where if they don't give grades to the kids, then there's pressure on the government to give them what they want so that the kids can go on and graduate. The kids literally cannot graduate. So I think this is ongoing because I think she said that there are kids that have graduated even within the last year who don't have a diploma and can't go on into the job market because they can't prove that they graduated. So they're holding these kids hostage, ultimately. And a couple of the people on that said, I disagree with that practice. And a couple of the others said, well, I support the workers here. I support the workers. And the two people said, it's not that we don't support workers. It's that we disagree with their methods. I don't like the fact that they're holding these kids hostage to get what they want from the government. It was essentially what he said. And she said one other time, this one guy and girl kind of agreed on something that she said, I bet they're conservative. So that was just amazing to me because the liberals didn't care about the kids. They didn't. They just cared about my rights, get my stuff. And the conservatives seemed to be a little bit more understanding of the situation, but saying, I don't think that's the right way to do it. Just thought I'd close with that. Take it for what you will. This is Wiggins America. We'll see you next week.
Get more at 971talk.com.
Personal story to end the show today. So my wife, Katie, is an English teacher. She just got back from Cambridge, England. She flew into London for a week right before school started. So this was about a week and a half ago. And she loved it. She was with about 9 other, so 10 total teachers. So it was a professional development thing, learning some stuff about the history of certain authors that come from Cambridge. Cambridge is a very, very famous university. Beautiful place, kind of touristy now, apparently. But the university is not as much as the town is. She got to see the first, like, took her into a vault, I guess is something that they don't always do. She got to see the first New Testament in English ever, written in probably the early 1500s. Massive book, handwritten. It was the first translation to English from the New Testament. I mean, that's literally like the basis of all of Western civilization she's looking at right there. That's pretty neat. But the reason I tell this story is because with these 9 people, 10 total people, you know, they're educators, so I would say generally they lean left, but I didn't really know. And she didn't know. And she said, for the most part, nobody brought up politics on this trip. They were talking about school and they were talking about things, but you spend a week with people and you get to know them and things come up, even if they're trying to stay away from those topics. And so she told me candidly, and now I'm telling you on the radio, I don't know if I should do this. I'm doing it anyway. She said, Ryan, I think there were a total of maybe 2 conservatives there aside from me, but nobody really said anything. It was like one topic came up one time, and I'll share that in a minute, that made her think that maybe 2 of them are conservatives. And then in that same topic, and one other time, 3 of them seemed leftist, which left 4 people that she just had no idea. So if you take that number, I love this story because it kind of condenses America into 10 people. And I think it's pretty indicative, actually. You condense all of America into 10 people. So 4 of them did not even give any indication that they were interested in politics at all. 3 of them seemed to be conservative, but they didn't want to make a big deal about it, and they didn't really even tip their hand much, except on one thing. And then 3 of them looked like they lean left, but of those 3, 1 of them was vocal. Is that not a cross-section of America right now? So let me tell you about the one, and then I'll tell you about the other ones. The one who was vocal on this trip get this. Now, she didn't say this is how I knew he was a leftist. She said this guy was a gay art professor in San Francisco. And I said, oh, well, you probably know his politics. She said, no, that I didn't know at all. But she said at one point they all became good friends on this trip, which is great, because if you're going to spend a week with some strangers, good thing they were nice. She said on this trip, nobody really brought anything up, and everybody was getting along. They would go to pubs in town and stuff, and they all just had a good time when they weren't at the conferences. And he said at one point, he goes, oh, thank God you guys are fun and not Trump supporters. And she thought, wow, what a weird sentence. Because most of them, like I said, had not brought up politics at all. In fact, I think generally the conversation, even that she said somebody kind of tipped their hand, that wasn't even with the whole group. So this guy had no idea what the politics of most of them were, but just assumed that because he liked them, that they must be liberal. Now that is living in a bubble. So you think people will say, oh, you're conservative, you're Midwest, you kind of live in a bubble. No, you do not. In fact, I don't really even hear that criticism a lot. It's kind of a straw man on my part, because I don't get the whole, well, you live in a bubble thing that much. But there really are people in the United States who live in a leftist bubble. They choose their media, which is fine, but they also don't even in regular interaction with people interact with anybody who's outside of their political mindset, which I do all the time, even though I work here, and I'm sure you do. But he just assumed that because they were cool, that they must not support Trump. How sheltered do you have to be to assume that your politics project onto anybody as likability? That's awful. But the other story is that the couple people who did tip their hand on one issue, get this, that university is either going into or they're in the middle of a strike. So the professors are wanting more pay, and so they're striking, but they don't strike the way that we do in America. Maybe their labor laws are different or their contracts are different. I don't know which. But they want the government to pay them more money. So instead of doing the strike that we do, which is you just stop, you don't work, you put everything on hold, that's an effective way to strike. They don't do that. They just don't give grades to any of their kids. So and maybe it's because of contracts, like they're obligated to work, but they've found this way around it where if they don't give grades to the kids, then there's pressure on the government to give them what they want so that the kids can go on and graduate. The kids literally cannot graduate. So I think this is ongoing, because I think she said that there are kids that have graduated even within the last year who don't have a diploma and can't go on into the job market because they can't prove that they graduated. So they're holding these kids hostage, ultimately. And a couple of the people on that said, I disagree with that practice. And a couple of the others said, well, I support the workers here. I support the workers. And the two people said, it's not that we don't support workers. It's that we disagree with their methods. I don't like the fact that they're holding these kids hostage to get what they want from the government. It was essentially what he said. And she said one other time, this one guy and girl kind of agreed on something that she said, I bet they're conservative. So that was just amazing to me, because the liberals didn't care about the kids. They didn't. They just cared about my rights, get my stuff. And the conservatives seemed to be a little bit more understanding of the situation, but saying, I don't think that's the right way to do it. Just thought I'd close with that. Take it for what you will. This is Wiggins America. We'll see you next week.
Get more at 971talk.com.